take a look at your Champaign-Urbana weather for the rest of the week. Today, mostly cloudy with some isolated showers expected in the late afternoon. That's still a possibility, about a 20% chance of rain. A high of 78 for the rest of today with some southeast winds about 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy. We're expecting a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms during the day with a low of 62. At night, that will increase to about a 60% chance of showers with a high of 75. By Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers. Friday, partly sunny with a high of 71. Friday night through Saturday night, we can expect it to be partly cloudy with a 50% chance of rain. The next day on Sunday, we might see some scattered thunderstorms during the afternoon and a high of 76. Taking a look at temperatures around the state right now, we are seeing some rain in northwest Illinois at the moment, in Moline, light rain at 64, and Chicago at O'Hare Airport at the moment, it is cloudy and 69. Up in DeKalb, partly sunny and 67 right now. In Galesburg, cloudy and 72. In Pontiac, partly sunny and 75. It's mostly sunny in Decatur and Peoria, 76 in Decatur, 74 in Peoria right now. In Springfield, it's 77 degrees. And at Willard Airport in Champaign, partly sunny and 76. A little bit overcast outside of our studios here in Urbana, and it is 77 outside of our studios at Friends Plaza. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Meadows Edge at Clark Lindsay, a new community to be located adjacent to Meadowbrook Park on the east side of the Clark Lindsay campus. Meadows Edge will offer villa accommodations for active adults looking for condo-style homes. Learn more at clark-lindsay.com.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. A push to bring high-speed internet to smaller communities and rural areas across America was a key part of President Obama's 2009 stimulus package. In Champaign-Urbana, the UC2B project is starting up, largely with funding from that federal stimulus. Northern Illinois is the site of a couple of similar projects, including the DeKalb Advancement of Technology Authority, or the DATA Consortium, as it's called. They're working on high fiber service for Northern Illinois University. Meanwhile, iFiber is working on providing similar services to other Northern Illinois counties. As Guy Stevens reports, both DATA and iFiber are now moving from the construction phase to implementation.
When most of us talk about high-speed or broadband internet access for our home or business, we think in terms of megabits of data. Okay for viewing a website or watching YouTube, but for really data-intensive use, like streaming a high-definition movie, video conferencing, or 3D medical imaging, way too slow. Now imagine you could access the internet at speeds 1,000 times faster. With a gigabit connection, all sorts of things become not only possible, but practical as well. That's the promise of the fiber optic networks that are being built in Northern Illinois and across the country. John Lewis is director of the Regional Development Institute at Northern Illinois University. He's overseen the development of data and iFiber, as well as another NIU-led broadband project, the Illinois Rural Health Net, which links healthcare providers across the state. Lewis says a key to the success of these projects is the public-private partnership that developed them. That allowed the networks to be built and made available at a lower cost. Lewis says data and iFiber face two challenges going forward. First, getting the 500 community anchor institutions that will be part of the network, schools, municipal governments, and the like, hooked up. Second, finding ways to extend that network to the broader community.
How do we make this available to businesses? How do we make it available to get fiber to the home to small communities or 4G networks out to the rural regions and improving the quality of life that they have?
Matt Parks is director of network and communication services at NIU. He says getting the networks up and running has taken a real effort by all concerned. But, he says, in some ways, the work is just beginning.
There's a lot of learning that needs to happen as we go forward with schools, with libraries, with municipalities, having the business sector come to the table and help frame the story of how they use it.
Scott Eberle is president of the Fiber Utilities Group, a firm that works with businesses on ways to access and use the Internet. He says moving from a situation in which scarcity of capacity has been the norm to one of abundance is both an opportunity and a challenge for everyone.
It has a tremendous enabling power to change how people live, how people do business. Now, what is the business community? What is the university? What does the group do together to change how they operate their businesses, their communities, and how can we bring more value to the community as a whole by utilizing these assets?
Clayton Black is a regional E-Team leader for Broadband Illinois, a nonprofit that works to promote and coordinate efforts to bring broadband access to all parts of the state. Black says the effect of all these networks is transformative.
Broadband's really the great equalizer. It's the thing that gets small businesses up to where the big businesses are. It's enabling that local connection that lets you really do something in those small communities that previously you had to go to a big town to do.
Everyone agrees that with data and iFiber, DeKalb County and the entire Northern Illinois region are in an enviable position. Matt Park says it's also a necessary one.
Gigabit is here, right? I mean, the world we live in today, as you get into the metropolitan areas, gigabit is where it's at.
In other words, if you're not ahead, you're behind. And with these networks, no one here is about to let that happen. I'm Guy Stevens.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WYLL. Well, with summer more or less here at this point, hiking enthusiasts are starting to hit the trails. One popular destination is the Cache River State Natural Area in the far southern tip of the state. That's where Judy Valente meets up with two expert hikers and learns that hiking is about more than just physical exercise.
I'm walking in a place called Heron Pond Trail with Susan Post and her husband Michael Jeffords, nature photographers and writers.
Sometimes we'll come and do this hike every day, 3 or 4 days in a row when we're down here. And every time you will see something different or you'll have a different experience. Even though you're walking the same trail, there's always something different to see.
Heron Pond Trail is in the Cache River Basin, a place whose name in French means hidden. With its swamps, exotic birds, cypresses, and rare water tupelo trees, the area looks more like a Louisiana bayou than the flat prairie land usually associated with Illinois.
That call that you just heard is a prothonotary warbler, and we like to think of that as sort of the signature bird of this area, bright yellow.
As a child, Post would hike with her grandmother along the woods and prairie in what is now Sugar Grove Nature Center in southern McLean County. She eventually authored the guidebook Hiking Illinois.
A lot of people have asked me, why do you hike? You know, the simple answer could be, well, I just like to see things, look at things. It's like my own personal little Facebook, only it's I'm walking.
Why is walking a trail a special experience?
On a bicycle, you wouldn't find this.
Ah! That is a huge beetle.
Yeah, I turned over a log and up pops a Bessie beetle called a horned pisalis.
Jeffords and Post happen to also be entomologists.
It's a beetle that talks to its young. They rub wing covers together and it makes this kind of high-pitched, and if I could get it to do it, no, she's not going to perform.
We leave our beetle friend behind and come upon an amazing sight, an entire forest of towering cypresses and water tupelo trees rising out of a swampland.
And luckily for us, there's a boardwalk.
So this boardwalk is actually taking us over a swamp.
Correct. Otherwise, we'd be here in our boots and you'd hear splishing and splashing.
Some people think you could dissolve or drown in a swamp. Could you drown in this swamp?
I don't think so, because if you look close, you can see the bottom.
The cypress trees rise to about 120 feet and have feathery, pine-like needles. The water tupelos, at least in this area, are much shorter, with shiny, ovate leaves. This is pretty amazing, though. I mean, this whole panorama of trees just rising out of this swampy water. I mean, it's a whole forest.
When you bring groups of people here, it's like immediately silence. It's like they're in a reverent place, and in a way you are.
In your book, Hiking in Illinois, you say that hiking is an escape from the rigors of modern life.
It seems like as soon as I hit the trail, I become in a different mindset. My senses are more attuned to, oh, what am I hearing? What am I seeing? I become more relaxed, calmer, and it just seems like your troubles and cares seem to vanish.
This is not just about getting exercise, being physical, is it?
Well, you're exercising your mind as well, and exercising your spirit. You're just renewing yourself. You're away from a phone, a computer. You're away from everything.
Sue and I aren't religious people, but we probably are spiritual people because this is our cathedral.
Post and Jeffords inform me there is one more must-see stop on Heron Pond Trail, the site of the largest cherry bark oak tree in Illinois.
Well, here we are at the state champion cherry bark oak.
Oh my gosh, I've never seen such a big trunk on a tree.
If you have a school group of, say, small children like kindergartners, it takes around 16 of them holding hands outstretched to reach around the whole tree.
As we make our way to the end of the trail, we encounter yet another familiar sight in the Cache River Basin.
We better watch our step here as we have a very large cottonmouth at the side of the trail.
Amber-colored cottonmouths are among the few poisonous snakes in Illinois.
They're not aggressive and not afraid of you either, so they just kind of sit there and intimidate you. If we were to mess with it, it would open its mouth and show its white. And then if you see, it's just kind of gently crawling away.
Well, bye, cottonmouth. We'll see you later.
The early settlers who came through here and they wrote in their journals described this place as a cheerless, miserable place, sacred only to the ague, which was disease, malaria, and fever.
But that's not it at all.
That's not it at all.
Post and Jeffords have hiked thousands of miles all over the world, but they call Heron Pond Trail one of their favorite places on earth, a small piece of paradise. I'm Judy Valente.
Support for WILL comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the standard all-wheel drive Subaru Outback with an EPA highway rating of 29 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at their showroom on Route 45 in Savoy or at SubaruofChampaign.com.
Some great songs by great composers live only on the shelves of the Library of Congress.
You will not hear an incredible torch song for a 1935 MGM flick that never got made.
Lost my one and only.
A trio finds hidden musical treasures and brings them to life later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, June 5th, 2013. On this day in 1851, Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin began its serial run in an abolitionist newspaper. It ran in weekly installments for 10 months, generated some interest among opponents to slavery, but didn't reach a larger audience until it was republished as a book in 1852. Many critics dismissed the novel as sentimental, and several characters gave rise to persistent stereotypes of African Americans. Even so, it attracted thousands of Northerners to the abolitionist cause. It sold 300,000 copies in the United States in its first year in print. Today is the birthday of one of the great men of letters of the 20th century, Alfred Kazin, born in Brooklyn in 1915. Grew up in the Brownsville section of that borough, and said, "We were children of the immigrants who had camped at the city's back door, a place that measured all success by our skill in getting away from it." He loved books, spent much of his time sitting on a fire escape, reading whatever he could get his hands on. When he was a senior in college, he read a book review in the New York Times that made him so angry, he got off the subway, went to the Times office, and complained to the editor in person, who was so impressed he got Kazin a job writing freelance book reviews. He studied literature at Columbia and started writing a survey of American literature. The result was his book On Native Ground. It became one of the most celebrated books of literary criticism of the decade. When asked why he spent so much of his life working as a critic, Kazin said, "I am dissatisfied, profoundly so, with the world as it is, but I would be dissatisfied with any world, and I'd hate to lose my dissatisfaction." And it's the birthday of poet Federico Garcia Lorca, born in Granada, Spain, 1898. He published a book of poems based on gypsy folklore called The Gypsy Ballads, and it made him Spain's most popular living poet. His poems appealed both to the literary critics and the common people, and many of them were set to music. Garcia Lorca once heard a prostitute singing a song in the street, and he was shocked to realize that he had written the lyrics she was singing. In 1998, on the 100th anniversary of his birth, the Spanish government flew a helicopter over his home city of Granada and dropped 100,000 leaflets of his poetry. Lorca said, "To burn with desire and keep quiet about it is the greatest punishment we can bring on ourselves." And here's a poem by Dylan Thomas entitled Being But Men. Being but men, we walked into the trees afraid, letting our syllables be soft for fear of waking the rooks, for fear of coming noiselessly into a world of wings and cries. If we were children, we might climb, catch the rook sleeping, and break no twig, and after the soft ascent, thrust out our heads among the branches to wonder at the unfailing stars. Out of confusion, as the way is, and the wonder that man knows, out of the chaos would come bliss. That, then, is loveliness, we said, children in